if you haven't seen the movie or the film, Bruce becomes God for a day. And he gets all of the characteristics that come with the job description of being God. And one of those is that he hears that people are praying. And so what does Bruce do? He gives everybody what they want, what they wish for. And anarchy and chaos ensues. And that's how we end up in this scene, in this conversation with God. And I love that line, how on earth does anybody know what they want? And that comes back to what we've been talking about for the last couple of weeks. If you're joining us for the first time, we've been doing this series on, if you were given three wishes, what would you wish for? And so we've seen movies, the genies, and all kinds of ideas around this concept. If you were given a couple of wishes, and what we've been doing is we've been exploring some of the things that might be things that we could wish for if we actually had them. But the reality is that these are gifts that are already given to us, so we don't have to wish for them. We saw the idea of courage, and we saw Jesus' interaction with the religious leaders last week. And so you can catch those messages online if you want. But today we're going to look at another person in the Old Testament. And they're given, it's the only one place where God actually does this, comes to this king, and he says, whatever you want, you can have, just ask for it. And so many of you will know this king. His name is King Solomon. And just to give you some context, King Solomon was Israel's third king. Now, King Solomon was the son of King David. And if you know anything about King David, and if you know where Solomon came from, Solomon was the son of Bathsheba. Bathsheba was this one that David had the affair with, who then killed the husband to cover up the affair, and then the child that was born in that affair died. But King Solomon is the next son that is born from Bathsheba. Now, King David didn't just have one wife. He had a couple of them. And so there were a lot of sons that were competing for the throne. So there's not a lot known as to how Solomon became the king. We're not even quite sure how old he is. Depending on who you talk to, he was either from the age of 15 to 30. Somewhere in that bracket, he becomes king. And remember, he's not the oldest. There's a bunch of older brothers. And so there's all this conflict. When David passes away and King Solomon inherits the throne, he's given the throne by his father David, and there's a whole bunch of chaos and arguing and fighting and bickering, some crazy stuff that goes on. And so within that context, King Solomon comes to the throne, a young adult, maybe even a teenager, and he's spending time with God, and he all of a sudden has this vision, or hears this voice that comes to him, as we're going to read this morning, says, what would you want? If you could have one wish, what would it be for? And so if you'd like to follow along this morning, we're going to read from 1 Kings chapter 3 and following, verse 1 and following, and listen how the dialogue goes along. So just a bit more context. Solomon made an alliance with Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and married his daughter. He brought her to the city of David until he finished building the palace and the temple of the Lord and the wall around Jerusalem. The people, however, were sacrificing at the high places because the temple had not been made for the name of the Lord. Solomon showed his love for the Lord by walking according to the instructions given to him by his father David, except, that's always a bad word, except that he offered sacrifices and burnt incense in the high places. And the high places were the competing system for the temple and the competing system for God. And later on in life, this is going to come back and haunt Solomon and lead him away from God. The king went to Gibeon to offer sacrifices, for that was the most important high place, and Solomon offered 1,000 burnt offerings on that altar. 1,000. Now, according to Old Testament laws and rules and regulations, when it came to offerings, if you were going to offer sin offering, you offered one. So Solomon has all this wealth and power and wants to be generous to God and has this generous heart to God that he offers 1,000 sacrifices. That's a lot. At Gibeah, the Lord appeared to Solomon during the night in a dream, and God said, ask for whatever you want me to give you. You got a wish. What do you want, Solomon? Solomon answered, and I love this, you have shown kindness to your servant, my father David, because he was faithful to you and righteous and upright in heart. You have continued this great kindness to him and have given him a son to sit on his throne to this very day. You've been good to me, is what he's saying. Now, Lord my God, you have made your servant king in place of my father David, but I am only a little child and do not know how to carry out my duties. Isn't that interesting? You have chosen a great people, too numerous to count or number. So give your servant a discerning heart to govern your people and to distinguish between what is right and wrong. For who is able to govern this great people of yours? So Solomon is given one wish. And the one thing he asks is for discernment, or if you had a King James version, he asks for wisdom. Of all the things that you could ask for, long life, immortality, riches beyond fathom, multiple wives in that cabal, whatever that you wanted, you could have at that point. And Solomon asks for one thing. He asks for discernment, for wisdom. So maybe another thing that we could ask for if we ever had this opportunity would be not just courage and not just the interaction we saw with the Pharisees and the religious leaders last week of a pure heart, but also maybe one of the things that we could ask for would be this thing called wisdom or a discerning heart. Verse 10. The Lord was pleased that Solomon had asked for this. So God said to him, since you have asked for this and not for long life or wealth for yourself, nor have you asked for the death of your enemies. Oh, I forgot that one, right? Because he had a lot of them and brothers. Let God get rid of all the brothers, right? Anyways, I will give you what you have asked. I will give you a wise and discerning heart, so there will never be anyone like you, nor will there ever be. Moreover, I will give you what you have not asked for, both wealth and honor, so that in your lifetime you will have no equal among kings. And if you walk in obedience to me as you kept my and keep my decrees and commands as David your father did, I will give you long life. Then Solomon awoke and he realized that he had had a dream. So if you were given the chance to ask God for anything, what would it be? And Solomon asked for a discerning heart. Now, there's a couple of interesting things that I want to unpack here this morning that define what this wisdom, what this discerning heart is. And what does it begin with? So here's just a couple of things that I noticed that Solomon says that's going on in this story that I think sometimes we kind of miss. We focus on the wisdom thing, and that's great, and we focus on the discerning heart. But there's characteristics to go here. There's steps to go here. There's a beginning here that starts this discernment and this wisdom that's going on. So first of all, what happens here is Solomon acknowledges God's favor. If you want a discerning heart, if you want wisdom in life, then you need to acknowledge who God is and his favor in your life. Now, this is something that we don't talk about too much in church today. If you read through the Old Testament, you'll find this is a theme that comes up over and over and over again. God's people, many times God's leaders, are asking for, craving for, trying to obtain God's favor. Listen to this. In Exodus chapter 33, verse 10, character named Jacob, he's wrestling with the angel of the Lord, wrestling all night long. And when the morning comes, he says, if I have found favor in your eyes, accept this gift from me. Manasseh, another king in 1 Chronicles chapter 33 says, in his distress, he sought favor of the Lord. King David himself, Solomon's favor in 2 Samuel chapter 15, verse 25. Then the king said to Zadok, take the ark of God back into the city. If I have found favor with God, he will bring me back and let me worship with him again. Nehemiah chapter 5, verse 19. Remember me with favor. Daniel chapter 9, verse 17. Now God, hear the praises and petitions of your servant for your sake. Lord, look with favor on your servants. Jesus says it in Luke chapter 2, verse 52. And Jesus grew in wisdom and stature and in favor with God. Do you want God's favor? You see, wisdom begins and starts with an acknowledgement that your life, everything you have, all your gifts, all your abilities, all your blessings, all the goodness that we sang about this morning has been given to us by God. And so wisdom starts with an acknowledgement that everything you have, everything you've been given, comes from God. Solomon says, you were good. You were kind to my father. You are good. You are kind to me. You have shown me all this goodness. And his life wasn't easy. Wasn't hard either in some other context, but he acknowledged God's goodness. Because God is good. How do you view God? I found out this week there's a video game called Pocket God. And this is a description of the Pocket game. You can download it from iTunes and Apple, and I would highly recommend you don't. But this is what it says. What kind of God would you be? Would you be benevolent, kind, or vengeful? Play Pocket God and discover the answer within yourself. On a remote island, you are the all-powerful God that rules over primitive islanders. You can bring new life, or you can take it away just as quickly. Seeing that the game options include throwing islanders into volcanoes, using islanders as shark bait, bowling for islanders with large rocks, or creating earthquakes to destroy the villagers, designers seem to think players will only want to play the role of a vengeful god. Isn't that crazy? But for many people, the way that they view God is not a God of goodness. Now, maybe that's because you have gone through some very difficult, trying, suffering times in life. And as you're going through those valleys, as you're going through that pain, you wonder, where is God? Where is your goodness, God? Where are you in this situation? And there's all kinds of reasons why we go through pain and suffering. And sometimes we will understand them. Sometimes we never will. Sometimes we'll look back in the past when we've passed through the suffering and the pain that we've gone through, and we'll go, oh, I know why I did that or why God took me through that. Other times you might not. And other times you look past and you go, oh, I couldn't see God's goodness when I was in there. But I can see how God protected and guided and steered my life and steered the life of those around me that I love. Wisdom begins with an acknowledgement of God's favor. Because that discerning heart only comes with the proper worldview of everything that you've been given, being able to attribute it to God himself who made you and created you and breathed life into you and cares for every single fiber of your body down to the hairs that are numbered on your head. Acknowledge God's favor. That's the first thing that Solomon does when God comes to him and says, hey, whatever you want, what do you want? And he says, oh, God, you've been so good to my dad, my father. You've been so good to me, and you've been so kind. And he's just worshiping God. He's saying, hey, you're the source of all of my strength. You're the source of all of my goodness. You're the reason why I'm here on the throne in the first place. He acknowledges God's favor. And then he even goes far further. He acknowledges his dependence on God. Not just God's favor, his goodness and kindness, but his dependence. He says, look, I'm still just a child. You put me in charge, you've given me this throne, and there's all these people that you've asked me to rule. They're so numerous, there's so many of them. I can't do this job, I'm just a kid. Now maybe he was 15 or 16, or maybe he was 25 or 18, but if you study the psychology of 15-year-olds to 30-year-olds, they never say, I don't know what I'm doing. Because they always know what they're doing. Yeah. It's just part of what happens in your psychological development, that you know everything, that you can do anything. And you believe it. It's why we send 18-year-olds to war and give them guns, which is crazy. Because teenagers and